Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I am your pop culture and sports nerd. Ali?
I am Ollie, your classic nerd.
And I'm VM, a comic book nerd.
You know what, guys? Fuck you. Fuck the both of you.
Yep.
The hell's your problem?
You know, you guys went on mandates without me.
I've gone on a mandate with you.
Without V?
Yeah. We went and watched a movie together.
When?
Avengers. Not Avengers. We watched something.
Why are you looking at me trying to recall the time that you guys went out?
I remember because there was this time when we were waiting. Remember we thought he was coming through? I'm not coming.
Us for Black Panther, I think.
Black Panther.
Yeah, you didn't want to be with the minorities for Black Panther.
Yeah, we watched Black Panther.
Plus, I had watched the night before, so.
Well, that's why. That's the only reason we went into mandate is because V was too busy to hang out with you, so you got stuck with me.
You were at work when we went.
I don't care. I would have liked an invite just to have known. Hey, Diz, we're going on a mandate. Would you like to join?
No.
That's fucked up.
In fact, I'm never going to invite you again.
That's messed up.
You're complaining.
I want to be invited.
You never invite me anywhere.
That's true. I do.
How do you expect us to tell you anything if you're going to complain about it the way that you
seriously.
Do?
Seriously.
Because you guys don't tell me about it.
Shameless.
Just like when you get upset that I don't invite you to clubs for my birthday.
I never get angry. I just hold you accountable
for that
for what I think is a act of clear bias.
Mm. You don't go to clubs. I eat. There's a difference.
Yeah, but you're allergic to a lot of food, so you know we never know.
Yeah,
it's a precarious landscape.
I'm actually saving your life.
Nuts.
I have no idea if people are putting peanut oil in shit or
peanut oil. You know, technically not allergic to.
Plus, the reality is like peanuts. With your pathetic ass immune system, you know. Who knows what next thing you're going to get allergic to? You're one fucking stop away from being allergic to air.
You know what?
Hypochondriac piece of shit.
Nuts in mangoes. It's not that fucking difficult.
I actually don't believe the mango thing. I believe the nuts thing because the nut allergy is a real allergy.
Mango allergy is a real.
Mango allergy is a lie.
To get
it's actually racist is what it is.
Oh.
Mangoes is a tropical fruit coming from the equatorial zones.
You know what else is a tropical fruit? Fruit? Punani.
Okay, whatever.
What?
The reason Diz is angry is we actually, V and I, checked out a really cool restaurant early last week.
On Sunday.
Last week.
It was 2 days ago.
2 days ago. What is the area? Lake Forest? Laguna Hills?
Laguna Hills.
That's Laguna Hills. Mission Viejo, Laguna Hills.
It's literally called Greek Bistro. You guys have to check this out. Now, the reason we're bringing this up, we're not getting paid for this promo. We just happen to really fucking love Greek food. Is that V and I are big connoisseurs of Mediterranean food.
Yes.
Living in Southern California,
it's a wasteland.
You get Mediterranean food, but like a generic Mediterranean
Daphne's
food.
Pita pita.
You don't get a lot of really good Greek food. And when we say Mediterranean, it generally means Italian. There's a couple Lebanese spots, a couple Middle Eastern spots, not a lot of Mediterranean food. And it's the East Coast has good Mediterranean food, but then they also have the generic Mediterranean food that you can get from food carts, right? That's like vaguely Mediterranean. It's got the oregano, spices, and it's chicken, it's rice, and some.
We're gonna be at Halal Guys.
The Halal Guys is basically it. It's a generic Mediterranean-esque, and it's not just Halal Guys. There's like a dozen food trucks that give the exact same type of food.
That's true.
A little bit of white sauce and whatnot. Yeah. We know because we had it at the convention we went to.
I didn't eat that shit.
Yeah, I ate it on Friday and it did some damage.
And about that life.
It made me a little.
I went to a Halal Guys ripoff in Boston a month ago.
Was it Guys That Are Halal?
No, it was. It actually sounded like Halal Guys, but it wasn't. It was like the chicken grill people or something like that. Like, oh. It was like a, yeah.
Anyway, so we finally, this new place has opened up called Greek Bistro. And they've only been open for a few days, and we decided to check it out. We were excited, but also a little bit hesitant.
Right? Yeah. Because we've been burned by Greek places before.
We have been. And there was a mom-and-pop shop ages ago.
Oh, it was
called
right by the
Gyro that we loved, and they kind of died. And we've never quite been the same.
We ate there when we first moved you here.
Yes, we did. We did. We had that in Peruvian food.
Yes.
And so we've been craving it, and we went into this place. It was fantastic. Wasn't it good?
It was very good.
Not only did it have a great environment, which I really enjoyed, their music was like acoustic Lady Gaga, which was interesting.
Yeah, they were like playing like pop hits, but like acoustic versions of
it. Yeah, it was very interesting. But the food was solid. Really good tzatziki. The pita bread was warm and fresh. And
very
delicious.
Nice.
And we both got gyro platters, and this was the key for us, right? Because everyone can do tzatziki. Everyone can do hummus. You can't really go Mediterranean raw food wrong too much. But the key has always been gyros. What often happens is that they put the gyro on that kind of spit, whatever you want to call it, that spins around.
Yeah, the spiral.
The spiral.
Yeah, the El Pastor looking
then
thing.
They, yeah, the El, well, that's where El Pastor kind of comes from, right? And then they carve up the meat, and then they leave the meat in the little tray for a little too long. What ends up happening is the meat gets a little dry.
Dry, yeah.
Or, in the case of Luna Grill, they don't even have that, and they carve it up, and they place it in little warming containers throughout the year, throughout the day. Throughout the day, just like in like a Subway. You know how a Subway you go in?
Yeah, and yeah. It's those little weird little, it's little heat
right in the
trays.
Front, heating trays in the front.
Mm-hmm. Sucks.
Those, what ends up happening is you end up getting this like soggy gyro meat.
Nah.
The gyro at Greek Bistro was delicious. It was succulent. It had just the right amount of crisp.
Succulent.
So if you are in Southern California, definitely check out Greek Bistro. Also, if you have any other recommendations
off for of McIntyre, by the way,
Mediterranean food, let us know, because we are Mediterranean food connoisseurs and we love that shit. But if you are in SoCal, go check out Greek Bistro. Really good, small, family operated. I'm excited. I'm definitely going to be.
Are we going to play them this episode so they get us a free meal?
No, I don't want a free meal. I want to support my local businesses, because the last thing I need is another fucking Greek place going out of business on me.
I wanted to actually endorse another great local restaurant.
I'm sorry, I don't allow that.
It's you know, they're a bit socialistic, right? You know, they're all about the working class, right? And they make cheesecake. The Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, fuck you, son of a bitch.
Turn off the podcast. I'm done.
God damn it. Fuck you, V. Fired. You know what? I'm done with them.
I'm done.
Done. You're kicked off.
You know, you say that every single week, and yet somehow I show up still.
We need to put out a statement that the Currently Nerdy podcast is no longer
disavows all association with V-Tran.
Yeah.
And he's lying. It's not said V. It's Vi.
It's Vi-Tran. Yeah.
It's been lying to you for years.
He spells it V-I, not V-I.
That's true. You know, we've been, and they've been lying to you for years about the existence of Finland as well.
What would I do? Release a press release where we correct its name? Just to fuck with them.
I'm down for that. I think we should just announce press releases, like, every few months, just to see if people are paying attention.
Press release.
Yeah.
No one ever does, though.
We'll see.
We know this already.
We'll get it retweeted by Sextus Caligula, at least.
No, we've got a couple of people paying attention to press releases. I think that's the only time they pay attention.
When we put out press releases?
Press releases.
Yeah. Dude, the Nerdist put out a press release.
They did.
That was a...
They did. Not surprising. Kind of the worst kept secret in the industry.
No, what? Chris Hardwick?
Chris Hardwick, yeah.
Is a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
So why don't you let them know what happened?
So, the other day, Chloe Dykstra put out a article on...
Is it Dykstra? I thought it was Dykstra.
Dykstra. For the Y.
Yeah. So Chloe Dykstra, who's a cosplayer, right?
I mean, she was also in a couple of... I mean, she's at a YouTube show with her brother. She's in some gaming stuff as well. Yeah. I think she was in Drag Me to Hell, oddly enough.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, she was also in Wrestling Isn't Wrestling.
What the hell was she in Drag Me to Hell?
I don't know. I just remember seeing on her IMDb, she has some... thing in the, yeah, some.
So Chloe Dykstra used to date Chris Hardwick.
I think she didn't know they broke up, by the way.
Hmm. I knew
they were dating.
I don't know who she was.
I knew who she was.
I didn't.
I knew who she was, and I knew they were dating.
Yeah.
He brought it up, and they were talking about
it a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they broke up a while ago, like 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, they've
been
broken
know
up
about it.
For, yeah, about a couple years.
I don't
years.
Follow the Nerdist stuff.
Yeah, and Hardwick's like married to somebody else now.
Yeah.
But, anyways. So Chloe Dykstra puts out this Medium article, right, where she's chronicling her relationship with someone. She doesn't mention him. She just said that he was a CEO of a company, and he's no longer part of that company. It started out as a podcast, and it became this big, like, conglomerate, you know. So she basically infers, is that the proper term? Infer?
Implies.
Implies that it's Chris Hardwick, right?
Yeah, she doesn't mention him by name.
But she puts out, like, what happened to her in the 3-year-long relationship that they were in, where she talks about how he was physically, emotionally, and psychologically abusive to her, right? So she talks about how she had to change certain behaviors while they were dating. Like, she wasn't allowed to drink in front of him. She was no longer allowed to talk to any guy friends. Yeah. She couldn't mention him, like... publicly, she couldn't talk about their relationship. She basically like had to give up all her friends and just spend all her time with him. She also mentioned how he expected her to just be ready for sex when he came home from work.
Yeah, I mean, I think the story of when she had suffered from an ectopic pregnancy and had to have surgery.
Yeah,
And the doctor coming in, the very first thing he says is, when can we have sex? Not, how is she doing? Is she going to be all right? I think that really struck out.
Yeah,
struck
that
out.
One.
I was like, fuck, this guy is a douche.
Yeah. Mm.
And not just a douche, but like abusive
douche. Yeah. And like she's talking about how she lost a ton of weight because of the relationship.
Warning, by the way, we'll put that in the
She was losing. She was losing her hair. You know, like her. She wasn't talking to her friends. Basically, she chronicled this relationship, that you know, and how it affected her, and then how after they broke up, how you know he tried like blacklisting her and like people that someone that she felt was a close friend, but also worked at the Nerdist, mm-hmm. was calling into companies and like. Bad mouthing her and like, you know, just saying all sorts of fucked up shit so she wouldn't get hired for jobs, and how now she's gotten better, but this is a story that she's been wanting to share. And she literally said, like, I've wrote this 17 times, you know, before posting it, mm-hmm. and I finally need to get my story told. And you know, bravo to her.
Yeah,
like when your abuser is this guy who is quite literally, probably one of, arguably, the most famous nerd.
Yeah, one of the most famous nerds.
Right? And you are in that world, right? Like, that's the world that you're a part of. And this guy is, you know, for all intents and purposes, one of the most popular people, if not the most popular people in that world. Like, he's got a show on AMC. He started his own, like, the Nerdist Industries. He's got another podcast now that's called What Idiotic? Like,
yeah.
Because he got out of the Nerdist. I mean, he's
a cornerstone of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Almost all the big panels, it's him interviewing people.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's got the talking show with Chris Hardwick. Like, on AMC, it's a big show. He did Talking Dead, Talking Bad, Talking Soul. Like, he has all these shows on AMC. And for her to speak out against him, knowing that it would get back to him and that she would get a lot of backlash from it, is really brave of her to do. Mm-hmm. Right,
absolutely.
And like,
also commend considering her for it. That it's not just when the cases are clear cut and mm-hmm. there's illegal acts done, right? In the case of Harvey Weinstein, where it was sexual abuse and assault in return for money, we're using his position, mm-hmm. where instances of rape, where there's clear cut, there's a legal aspect to it. When it is an illegal act, it's a little easier, right?
Yeah.
It's much harder when you get into the gray, murky world of interpersonal relationships, right?
Yeah.
When you're dating someone, the spousal abuse, you know, marital rape.
Yeah.
These are things that unfortunately, because they're in a legal kind of gray area, often get dismissed as not important, as not real. Oh, that's not real abuse. He's just a bad boyfriend. No, it's abusive. It's manipulative. It is damaging.
Yeah. What did they say about Aziz Ansari? Somebody was like, it's just a bad date.
It's a bad date. No, it's not. And, you know, it's the expectation of sex, the objectification of women, all of that. That I think makes this so much harder for her.
Yeah, it's annoying because, you know, it's good that women are speaking out now. Honestly, it's great. What's so disheartening about it is the fact that it's happening at such a magnitude that, you know, I think we're being faced with the reality of the way that our societal structure works. And what's even more messed up is when you realize the times that people will actually come up and defend these actions,
mm-hmm.
or try to find ways to, as opposed to maybe addressing the things that happened, try to attack her as being as lying or mm-hmm. something else. And she has nothing to gain. Like, she didn't put his name in the Medium article.
She didn't even tweet right? about
she
it.
She didn't tweet about it. She didn't say, she wrote it and then she put it out there and then it happened to go viral.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like so for people to say that she was looking for something out of it, I think is number one is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, Hardwick actually released a statement basically saying that, you know, that they were living together and he found out that she cheated on him and that he ended the relationship and she tried to get back with him for several weeks, right? And then these texts kind of got released of an interaction between the two of them by TMZ.
Didn't she talk about kissing another guy in the article? She had, she
yeah, said, some dude okay. named Sam.
She mentioned that there was an overlap between, you know, her relationships.
What's messed up about this is that whether or not he broke up with her, she broke up with him. You know, you have to believe that the abuse still happened. And what's more fucked up is that people try to use this almost as like a weapon to discredit her experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people, you know, actually it's not, I mean, you said it earlier, Lee, there's not nearly as many people defending Chris Hardwick in the situation than say some other, like the Jared Leto or someone else. What's messed up is that they're trying to use the fact that she tried to get back together with him after they broke up as a reason why she's lying about the abuse. And it's just, number one, it shows a complete lack of understanding of how abuse works, right? Mm-hmm. It's like saying, well, have you ever just tried not being bipolar or not being depressed, right? Like, it's like there's such a complicated situation here when you're playing with emotions and the people that you love, right?
There's also, I mean, one of the reasons why I think that the Chris Hardwick situation is so fascinating is that it's linked to so many other instances where you have people who have built a reputation based off of the good guy persona.
Yeah.
Right? Joss Whedon, quite famously, Dan Hartman, right? They have these good guy personas in public, and then it's revealed that behind closed doors, they're misogynist, sexist pieces of shit.
Dan Harmon.
Harmon. From Community and Rick and Morty, right?
Yeah.
He was revealed to have a really, fucked up personal life
in the past
he's cruel to female writers. Uh-huh. Same thing with Joss Whedon. So this is,
did they own up to it though?
Some of the Harmon did a really good self-reflection there.
Uh-huh.
He acknowledges a lot, like I'm not going to give him credit, like, oh, he's reformed. Uh-huh. But you could see he's working through some type of process, right? The problem is that good guy persona is endemic to nerd culture.
Yeah.
Right, the good guy is literally at the core of all nerd mythos,
right? Yeah.
From Star Wars to any type of video game that you play, you are the good guy. You are heroic, and the good guy gets the girl in the end.
Correct.
He is entitled to the woman, right?
Yeah,
the woman is literally a trophy that goes along with the story.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in all nerd stories, right? Star Wars is a prime example of, while not the best representation of gender diversity, certainly a good example of a strong female character that isn't just a love interest for Luke. Turns out to be a sister, right?
Yeah.
Awkwardly so.
Yeah.
Right? Luke doesn't get the good girl.
No, doesn't get the girl.
Doesn't get the girl. He's the good guy, but he doesn't get the girl.
Yeah.
Right? So there are cases where it's complicated, but the problem of the good guy persona is that it's so intrinsically entwined into the type of toxic masculinity that we see in nerd culture and gaming culture in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We see this idea that I'm a good guy, why aren't you with me?
Yeah.
The idea where the good guy approaches a girl, gets rejected and goes, that's why you're going to end up with shitty men. They're going to treat you bad. You deserve to get raped. That response is a response to the idea that the mythic good guy doesn't get the girl.
Yeah.
It's reality coming into contest with the mythos. And when the reality comes into contest with that mythos, right? When that clash happens, that's when, rather than going, oh, clearly I've got some fucked up ideas about women.
Uh-huh.
And some fucked up ideas about what I'm entitled to. Instead, it radicalizes them.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. It's not their ideas that are at fault. It's society. It's feminism.
Yeah.
Fuck those women, they say.
Can you imagine how delusional you have to be like, I filled out all the criteria, and yet somehow I don't get this woman.
I treated you well. I'm good. Well, like, you're not entitled to a woman's body just because you're nuts to them.
But
asshole.
This is how, like, I mean, this isn't, it's not, this is kind of how the incel communities got created, right? It's like,
that's
these,
exactly where they
like a lot of the more extreme incels are people that have issues with, you know, with this is, you know, like societal anxieties and stuff like that, right? But, you know, it all kind of got born from this pool of guys who were upset because the girl that they like, because they were nice to the girl they liked, but they got quote unquote friend zoned or whatever else, right? And all of a sudden, the girl made a fucked up decision because she just simply doesn't feel that way about him.
Uh-huh.
Right, and this is the incel community is directly the evolution of these frustrated people who think that somehow because they filled out their form correctly that they're gonna get what they want. This isn't fucking Walmart, right? You're not going to be like, well, I have enough money, so I should be able to get exactly what I should be able to pick what I want, and it should be done.
Well, I mean, here's the prime example of this is Elliot Rodgers, right, and who's kind of become the map or blueprint for all the incels.
Yeah, Santa Barbara shooter.
Santa Barbara shooter, the Isla Vista shooter in 2014. In fact, there were more recent shootings that have happened. Uh-huh. All are tied back to him in some way, shape, or form. They've read his manifesto, etc. So an example would be from his own manifesto, the My Twisted World, the story of Elliot Rodgers, right, which he emailed to a bunch of people. He says very clearly, I've been forced to endure an existence of loneliness, rejection, and unfulfilled desires, all because girls have never been attracted to me. Girls gave their affection and sex and loved other men, but not me. I don't know what you don't see in me. I'm the perfect guy, and yet you throw yourself at these obnoxious men instead of me, the supreme gentleman. So there is this persona that you're creating of I am not to blame. I'm the good guy. I am entitled to sex. And we see this, I think, very much in Chris Hardwick. Chris Hardwick is really the concatenation of all of these kind of trajectories in nerd culture. The persona of the good guy, of the nerd, right? He's not your typical dude. He's a nerd guy, able to achieve the success that nerds want because he's a good guy, gets the girl because he's a good guy, all of that, right?
Yeah.
And yet it also reveals that underneath that persona, not as a sort of contradiction to it, but as part and parcel to it, is the entitlement to women's bodies, the abuse of women, the manipulation of women, a deep-seated insecurity and male fragility that is rooted in violence towards women.
Yeah. Well, you think about his past before he did Nerdist. He was on Singled Out in the 90s.
Yeah.
Literally, the show is people choosing from a giant list
of
potential candidates of like what girl they want or what guy they want, right? He was the host of a show that literally had you go and just kind of pick
in
according to, you know, like
he, and later on in life he claimed that he hated that, like as much as it like jump started his career, he hated it because it spiraled him towards like drugs and alcohol, and that's when he was the worst of himself, because he claimed he was a different person when he was on drugs and alcohol, but all the stuff that he did, right, that he did to Chloe Dykstra, he did while sober.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no, I was a different person back then.
No.
And also, quite frankly, if you're on something, you're not, you know,
that's not an excuse.
Yeah, that's not an excuse to for anything. But at the end of the day, like, but
if you better yourself from it,
if you're someone who would never, who just don't have, who doesn't have the capacity to kill someone when they're sober, there's a strong chance that you don't have the capacity to kill someone when you're drunk either. That's in terms of like malicious murder, okay, right? Yeah. Right, and like there are parts of drugs that will amplify behaviors that are already inside you, right? So it's like he may have been able to convince people that the part of him that was not sober was bad, but the part of him that's sober is good. But in actuality, you can tell that there's a lot of those things just don't go away when you're sober.
I know people who have gotten sober and have become better people afterwards, right? Drugs and alcohol do take a toll on you, and they do, like, you will change your behaviors if you're an alcoholic or addicted to like to pills.
I'm not saying that you're fucked. Like if you're doing bad things when you're drunk, you're gonna
naturally I mean, like, you are a different person when you're an addict than when you are when you're sober.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like your behaviors do shift, and you realize cognitively that the person I was as an addict is not the person that I am being sober. And I can make that distinction, right? But for Hardwick, he doesn't have that scapegoat that he did when he was on Singled Out of being an addict, now with the Chloe Dykstra situation, right?
Yeah.
He can't use that same excuse that he used then.
Because the reality is that it's not an excuse. It's part of a cultural issue.
Right? Correct.
It's a combination, and this is why we have a problem when we talk about this stuff, right? We see them as kind of disjointed. What we're not seeing is a mix of deep psychological alienation with social issues, right? So a combination of a social, cultural value creation, right? In which certain types of men values, characteristics are vaunted. And a result of the kind of being awarded is women as an object, right? Add that to a deep certain psychological dysfunction, right? Anxiety, insecurity, etc., and you have Chris Hardwick, and not just Chris Hardwick, but the long line of these kind of men. And they fall into a spectrum. On one end, you have the Chris Hardwicks that abuse women. And on the other end, you have Elliot Rodgers that are literally shooting and killing people. And then on the other end, you have people like Aziz Ansari, which are seemingly benign, but just as toxic. The entitlement to a woman's body.
Uh-huh.
Most men fall into the Aziz Ansari camp. Right? They don't see themselves as bad guys. They don't see themselves as abusive or manipulative or whatnot. But they still have all sorts of fucked up ideas about sex and women and access to women's bodies, right? Mm-hmm. Even men's sexual fantasies revolve almost entirely or entirely masturbatory. Mm-hmm. The woman is an object.
Yeah.
Right? What you do to her is what gets you off, right? Versus seeing sex as a literal social act in which two people are doing it together and getting off together. It's seen as almost entirely masturbatory, right?
Yeah.
All of pornography is basically that, with the exception of feminist porn, right? Mm-hmm. So all of pornography is basically that. That's men's fantasy. So we all fall into that category. But that's part of the spectrum. That's still part of this same spectrum that includes Elliot Rodgers, that includes Chris Hardwick. And we have to acknowledge that we can't just go, oh, Chris Hardwick's the bad guy. Oh, he's a douchebag. He turned out to be. We need to ask ourselves the kind of social and cultural underpinnings that produce Chris Hardwick and how those social scripts also influence us.
So along those lines of abuse towards women, I want to bring this up. I'm not going to talk about it at length because if we did, we'd have to have like another full on like 45 minutes just dedicated to this. But on Monday, June 18th, a rapper named XXXTentacion was shot and killed in Deerfield, Florida. So the thing about XXXTentacion is, for those of you guys who don't know, he's a 20-year-old rapper. He was actually pretty famous and he was getting bigger and bigger, like as mm-hmm. the years are have been going on. Like, he's been in the game for like 2 or 3 years with like some notoriety, but he got in trouble earlier for beating his pregnant girlfriend.
Jeez.
Like beat the crap out of her. Like, if you saw the pictures of her, like, I saw it and I was pissed looking at it, right? Mm. And then while he was in jail for that, he also beat up a gay man because the gay man looked at him, all right? And a lot of what's been said is, like, good, another abuser and another homophobe is gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, he's a 20-year-old, right?
He's young.
Very young, yeah.
Only 20.
Now, don't get me wrong. What he did, both to his girlfriend and to the guy in jail, is despicable, right? Absolutely despicable. You never put your hands on a woman and you never just beat somebody because they're gay. Like, that's totally unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Right? But I think because he
I always get a little worried.
Okay, no. Here's my thing, right? But because he was so young, mm-hmm. right? I think there was still room that he could have grown from it, right? I saw somewhere online saying, like, had Malcolm X died at the same age that XXXTentacion died, if he was famous, he would have been known as an abuser, a drug addict, mm-hmm. and, you know, and a criminal. But because he died later and he you know, reformed his life, we know him as the Malcolm X that we know him now, right? Not to say that XXXTentacion and Malcolm X are the same, but because he had so much more room to grow, there could have been some change. Not excusing what he did, but I still think some of the criticisms and saying, like, well, good, like, that's one less.
Well, you should celebrate anyone's death. Yeah. Right? I'm with you there. I don't want to also. I'm not interested in his reform. I'm sorry.
I'm not.
You know what I mean? Just saying, it's like that type of labor is on him. It's not on us. It's like at some point we need to also acknowledge it's like, it's good to be optimistic. It's good to have hope for the future. But it's like, if you're abusive, you're abusive.
Yes.
Can you change? Maybe. It's possible. I'm not going to deny that abusers can change. But I also don't want to, because there's this, I don't want to dehumanize abusers. We have to acknowledge that they are human.
Correct.
Because by acknowledging that we're human, we're not just protecting their rights. We're also acknowledging that they're one of us.
Yeah.
Right? That they're not a foreign other monster.
Uh-huh.
The historian Sharon Block really brilliantly commented about this during the Bill Cosby scenario. One of the reasons why people had such a hard time believing that Bill Cosby did what he did is because we think of rapists and people who commit sexual assault as monsters. Mm. We don't think of them as sweater-wearing dads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? And we need to shake that and abuse that notion that these are ordinary men that do this type of stuff, right? It's not monsters that do it. So humanizing, recognizing the human component is super important there as a strategy of accountability for ourselves, mm-hmm. right? But I also don't want to fall into the trap of centering them. I want to center the survivors. If they reform, great. If they don't reform, fuck them. What I do want to acknowledge is that the type of support, what we should be focusing on is not on temptation's death, right? But on the victims of temptation's life
uh-huh.
and centering their experiences yeah. and supporting those individuals.
In this situation, he happened to be gone before he had a chance to redeem himself. You know, which is what it is. It's a shame for, you know, because I think we all would like to have a chance.
Assuming that he is.
Well, that's making the assumption, right?
I'm not saying that he would. I'm saying for people to celebrate his death is wrong.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I could agree with you.
Like, there. If Chris Hardwick hypothetically were to die tomorrow, right, I wouldn't excuse him of what he did, but I also wouldn't be like, oh, good. You deserved it.
I certainly reveling in the death of another human being, regardless of how horrible they are. There's something that's
it's kind of
really fucked up about that. I mean, it's just yeah, you know, like there are people that you know that upon their death, you kind of go, all right, well, you know, it is what it you know. And you can't you're not going to celebrate it, but at the same time, you're like we are, you know, like I'm not shedding any tears for the death of Pol Pot, right, or Joseph Stalin or any of these people, right, but. You know, I'm not going to also sit there and I'm not going to make jokes and be elated about another human being's death.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe Scalia's death a little bit for me. Yeah, Antonin Scalia kind of. But,
we did kind of humorize.
We did smile yeah. a bit.
A little bit. I mean...
All right, well, we completely did.
Fuck. Hypocrites, a lot of us.
God damn it, we just ruined it for ourselves. Okay.
Fucking hypocrites.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's because he was a lot younger. Right, so that's for me. He still had room to grow. He wasn't a full fledged asshole like Antonin Scalia was at the time of his death, and he wasn't. You know, Scalia became more and more of an asshole.
You know, I mean,
he got older.
I think it's because Scalia for us represented everything wrong with American society.
But what is Sessions?
Yeah, Sessions is like that too,
right?
Sessions is absolutely
like. How the fuck do you go, like, on stage, and quote Romans? From the Bible and say that this is why.
Now, interesting enough, yeah. that Romans quote is also the quote that was used to justify slavery back in the day.
Yeah. So was it Romans 13?
Yeah, that quote is a very controversial quote in about obeying laws. It's a very controversial quote in the Bible. And theologians in particular have been taking a very strong stance against this. In fact, I think he made a really big mistake by using a biblical verse because he's now activated the American bishops.
They're talking against them.
Very powerful. Yeah. They tend to be quite conservative because it's a very big institution, but they are pro-immigrant. I mean, yeah. the bulk of the Catholic Church's power comes from immigrants in Latin America, right? Yeah. So, he's pissed off. I think he's activated the American bishops, and they're gonna be in for a fight with the Catholics.
Is there anyone that's more hated than Jeff Sessions in America right
Donald
now?
Trump.
Like,
Donald
because
Trump.
Trump hates him too.
Like, Jeff Sessions, Donald Trump, Stephen Miller. These are all people that have what I and Ted Cruz are all people with very punchable faces.
Yeah,
that's your Ajit Pai also or whatever.
His Ajit name Pai is. Has a very
Ajit, punchable, very punchable
Dinesh
face.
Dinesh D'Souza.
Dinesh D'Souza is a very punchable face.
So
tell us why.
Yeah, I'm bringing up Sessions because I don't know if you've been living under a rock.
You do probably
right, but if you have been living under a rock and have we're your only source of news.
That's a shame.
It's a shame, but there's been stories, audio clips, photos, and videos of literally children being ripped apart from their parents, right? And the reason this is happening is because in the month of May, Sessions put out this zero tolerance against migrants, asylum seekers, and people that are trying to come into this country illegally. Or trying to come in here to seek asylum.
Yeah, as well. So this is a new policy
enacted last month,
cracking down on immigrants and using as a deterrent separating children.
Yeah. So what they're doing is they're separating these children from their parents, literally ripping them apart, putting numbers on them, putting them in fucking
literal camps. Barcodes that they wear.
Yeah.
Like there was a picture I saw yesterday of a child with the number 47 like on his chest.
Yeah.
On
they
his
also arm. Have wristbands with barcodes on them that which they use in order to keep track of who they are and also for their meal tickets.
Yeah. So they've been putting them in camps, and you'll see like pictures of like these like foil blankets. They have them in fucking cages.
Yeah, right? I saw those.
It's they've
concrete they, floors and shit.
They took over an abandoned Walmart and turned it into like a housing facility.
Kennel. It's basically a kennel.
Yeah.
It's a dog kennel.
It's just you see these photos and you hear these stories and you hear this audio, and if you like, if it doesn't like bother you.
There's something wrong with
you. There's something wrong with you.
Well, here's the thing, too. Is like this came out because, one, Jeff Sessions openly made a speech about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then a congressman decided, congressional representatives, like, we need to get access to this. So they showed up at the various detention facilities and immigration centers, and they were denied. And the image of our congresspeople being denied was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Then they slowly started to let the press in, first without cameras, then they allowed only one with cameras. And that leads you to raise the question, if they're willing to show you that, how much of it are they unwilling to show you,
mm-hmm.
and how bad does it get? But there is this kind of wanton cruelty, right, that the Trump administration has enacted for asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. Here's the key here. This isn't even an illegal immigration issue. First of all, I come from the sense that there's no such thing as illegal immigration. I don't believe that individuals can be illegal, right?
Yeah.
I believe that it's a bureaucratic administrative violation at the most, right? Separating children from their family members for asylum seeking, first and foremost, ignores the fact that asylum seeking is legal.
Yeah.
You legally enter a country and ask for asylum, and that's what you do in Canada. There's pictures of a Canadian Border Patrol picking up children and hugging them and all that, because it's a legal process.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeking refuge, right? It's asylum seeking is different. Even if you ignore that fact, yep. and you assume that these are all illegal immigrants, right? You are basically separating children from their families over a bureaucratic and administrative violation, barely a misdemeanor.
Yeah,
it would be like jailing someone or shooting them for jaywalking.
Yeah.
Oh, like just be like being black in this country. Yeah. Okay.
So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that this is a disproportionate response by the Trump administration.
I will tell you this: I try to think of a word that really encapsulates this, and it's like, I don't know, is grotesque.
Yeah.
A word that would that kind of fits just how sickening this is. Like
it is sickening.
I don't know if there's a. Like, grotesque is such a disgusting word, but I don't know if grotesque, like, even fucking touches the surface of this.
We should note that this isn't just a Jeff Sessions thing. This idea comes from Stephen Miller, who's a big proponent of it, even though he is a descendant, is of Jewish descent himself.
Mm.
He's got very clear white supremacist leanings here. The policy has been put forth. It's been enacted. It's being defended now by both Jeff Sessions, who's giving it to legal justification, as well as the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristen Nielsen, who is giving it administrative justifications, trying to explain why even going so far as denying that they're not separating children. And it's gotten to the point now that not only is the press paying attention to this, there is going to be mass protests on June 30th. We will be participating in that ourselves.
Absolutely.
The United Nations has called out this and said this is a violation of international human rights. It is. It's an agreed upon law that the United States has agreed upon, not the Rome Statutes, the international human rights. As a result, the United States decided that it was going to leave the United Nations Human Rights Council.
Yeah, thanks for that, Nikki Haley.
That is one of those moments of that's such a very typical Republican thing to do, right? So you don't like the fact? Well, then attack the source of the fact, right? It's like, oh, Snopes is liberal. Well, you can't trust anything from Snopes. Or, you know, oh, my professor so-and-so says, oh, liberal colleges, right? It's like, you don't like the fact, decide to attack them. You don't like the statement by the UN, leave the UN.
You can't say that they're politically biased.
Stupid decision on their part.
There is something so far, like, this is the reason why I think you more specifically, we always talk about how fucked up it is. That in every high school history book,
mm-hmm.
you have chapters and chapters about this American greatness, and you have less than a paragraph about Japanese internment.
Yeah, I'm one of those weird guys that brings up Japanese internment in conversations that have nothing to do with
it. But this is important, because guess what, all right? in this situation, this is the closest thing that we've gotten in modern society to what Japanese internment was, right? I mean, we're getting to that point. And what's even more fucked up is the fact that there is a population of people who are absolutely justifying the interring of these people of a very specific race, mm-hmm. right? And this is what's fucked up about it. It's like you have a whole channel devoted to it.
Yep.
I sat there. I was working at a community center today, and they had Fox News on. And you have every single fucking person, Tucker Carlson and Hannity and all those other virgins, you know, trying to go around talking, justifying what's going on. You have that fucking black-hearted thunder cunt from Grayskull, Ann Coulter, talking about crisis actors and how they don't believe them and this and that. And you have the Nazi sympathizer, Laura Ingraham.
Yeah, right? Ingraham in Sessions. Called it a summer camp.
Called it a fucking summer camp.
Sessions and Laura Ingraham.
If that's the type of summer camp she went to, that explains a lot.
So Laura Ingraham and Sessions were talking about it earlier. And they're like, well, no, it's not like an internment camp. This is what Sessions said. I quote, because what the Germans did was they were trying to keep the Jews from leaving.
They also said with the argument is like no one's getting gassed. Yeah. Oh, so you didn't do all the things the Nazis did.
Well,
no,
the Nazis also, they released videos talking about how Dachau and Auschwitz, like how the people there were happy playing soccer or playing games.
They also did the
same
thing.
Like,
the exact same line was, we're taking the children for a bath.
Yeah.
To bathe the children, and then they ended up gassing kids.
And this is, and you know what's messed up? George Takei just released a blog post talking about how, because he was 5 years old during Japanese internment. Mm-hmm. So he remembers bits of it, right? And he talked about, it's like, despite all that happened there, I never got taken away from my parents.
Yeah.
And you can imagine how fucked up it is that when you're that age, all you want to do is play and run around and explore. To not know, like, I got lost in a Costco when I was 6 years old, and I went fucking crazy. And that was 30 minutes.
I got lost in a mall once, but I ended up at a bookstore. I never, was very happy.
Yeah, like, but can you imagine the fear that goes through a child's mind thinking that they've been abandoned, right? And how fucked up and horrible
it is. Well, I mean, things like Fox News are necessary in order to toe the sort of party line, right? And in some regards, this is very much Orwell, this idea of, like, at some point, the party gets you to deny your own senses.
No, this is bullshit. Like, here's the thing, all right? This party line garbage is pissing me off because I could deal with old Republicans, right?
Well,
like,
old Republicans aren't too different from this.
So here's the thing, right? I have friends who are religious right Republicans. They're evangelical, non-denominational Christian Republicans.
Non-denominational. I don't know what denominational is.
I don't know. It's a math term, I think. Shut up. Listen, it's besides the point. So
it's denominator.
Whatever.
That's the math term.
So what they believe, right? Like the Laura Bushes of the world. Don't get me wrong. Laura Bush's husband was a fucking war criminal, right? But he was religious, right? That's the kind of Republican that I'm used to, right? My buddy Wes is a hardcore Christian, and he was talking about this, and he's like, this is inhumane. We need to put an end to it. He's like, I don't care. Like, Republican, Democrat, what this is doing is completely inhumane. We need to stop it. But then I have a Trump supporter that I'd work with, and he's like, well, they're illegal and they're doing something illegal, so we're just following the laws.
There is no law. Again, let's go back to the fact. First, asylum seeking is legal.
Mm-hmm.
Two, this is something put forth by the Trump administration, not any other administration.
It wasn't the Clinton administration?
No. Three, there is no law in the book that says separating children. This is a deterrent that was put forth by the Trump administration. There's no reason for it. There's no justification for it. But I also want to push back a little bit on this whole, like, oh, you know, the religious right versus the new. Yeah, Trumpkins are more assholes about things. That's because they're a cult of personality. But the reality is that ICE was created post 9/11 as a function of the Department of Homeland Security. It was Republicans that created ICE. And ICE is extrajudicial.
Uh-huh.
Meaning we already have an immigration apparatus that exists, INS, right? INS is centered in the courts.
Uh-huh.
It goes through the judicial system.
Yeah,
ICE does not. ICE reports directly to Homeland Security and to the executive branch. In other words, ICE is the closest thing we have to a Gestapo, to a secret police.
Uh-huh.
People often refer to the CIA or NSA. That's not accurate.
Uh-huh.
CIA and NSA are a surveillance apparatus. But an actual police force that is loyal to only one person, that is rooted in just the executive branch and acts extrajudicially, That's ice. Uh-huh. That's where it comes from. And Republicans created this. And I know there's a whole like, oh, this isn't us. And I get it. I understand the sentiment. We want to distance ourselves from this reality, right? But you only are going to change this if you first acknowledge that this is us.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You can get angry at kids in cages, and that's good. And I want you to say that this is not who we should be.
Yeah.
That's the argument we should be making. This is not who we should be. But we shouldn't be saying this is not us, because it also ignores that this didn't come out of nowhere. That this is grounded in the project of American. I mean, American nativism, mm-hmm. and anti-immigrant sentiment is as old as America itself.
Yeah.
I mean, the Know-Nothing Party of 1850, right? Anti-Catholic, yeah. Anti-Chinese.
Honestly, watch Gangs in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, that gave you kind of an idea.
The whole Bill point of the Know-Nothing Party was to be, or the Immigration Restriction League, right? The Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. Mm-hmm. Literally banned a whole population of people. I mean, I could post up all sorts of cartoons that show, quote-unquote, Chinamen, people from China, mm-hmm. about to behead workers. Mm-hmm. Right, the idea, that martyring of St. Crispin, very famous image, look it up, right? But the issue is that we've always kind of couched this language, right, of anti-immigrant sentiment, this Chinese, as economic anxiety, that, it was because the Chinese were coming into this country, that they were taking most of the job, that this was a labor-induced anxiety.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Right? It's economic. And it's the language that we use to describe this history for time and time. We don't justify it. You know, there's a lot of good historians that go, no, this is wrong. But they try to explain why it happened. Oh, it's because the working class was anxious about loss of jobs. The fact of the matter is that is the wrong way to look at it.
Yeah, we even saw it with the election of Trump, right? Yeah. The frustration of the white working class.
Yeah, the economic anxiety often ends up being a sort of excuse or justification for what is actually going on. And that is an ethnic nationalism. Right, and it's actually a political scientist named Kaufman who argues this. He goes, calling it nativism or economic anxiety ignores this, that what it actually is ethnic nationalism. You have a majority ethnic population, mm-hmm. that wants to secure and then ensure that majority, because they know how minorities have been treated, don't want to ever fall into a minority status. So what we see is not an economic anxiety, but a social demographic anxiety. Uh-huh. Society is changing.
So racial anxiety.
It's a racial anxiety first and foremost, because you're not anti-immigrants from other countries. Mm-hmm. You're usually anti-immigrants from a certain place. So, for example, the Chinese Exclusion Act in the 20th century laid the groundwork laid the groundwork for the current anti-immigrant policies, because the Chinese weren't coming and taking over jobs, but because the Chinese were considered a different race. Mm-hmm. They were racially considered inferior. Racially considered dangerous, right? Yeah. I mean, this even ties into Elliot Rodgers to a certain extent. Elliot Rodgers' misogyny was also deeply racial. He thought that the ugliest race was Asian men, and that white women shouldn't, even though he himself was multiracial, right? Mm-hmm. That white women shouldn't go with Asian men, right? So mm-hmm. it's always been a sort of demographic anxiety.
You know, he's not wrong.
Stop it. There's always been a sort of demographic anxiety, and this is really highlighted also in the work of the historian Paul Kramer, who wrote Blood of the Government, that really talks about how racial categories were created in the American Empire in the Philippines, right? So this is not just, we feel, we're losing our jobs, the Chinese are coming and taking our jobs. No, it's racial anxiety. And that's evident even to this very moment, right? Yeah. The unemployment ratio is going down. The stocks are looking good. The economy is not doing bad.
Yeah.
This is a racial anxiety. This is a social anxiety. It's a demographic anxiety. The arguments that are being put forth by Jeff Sessions, that are being put forth by Stephen Miller, that are being put forth by Donald Trump, aren't telling you we're here to save your jobs. They're here supporting ethnic nationalism, that is white supremacist American nationalism.
Right? But we're getting a space force too.
Yeah, whatever. And it's not. And the interesting thing is, it's usually immigrants themselves that play a role in this, right? So Stephen Miller is a descendant of Jewish parents, of Jewish families, of Jewish descent. This is a man who should be well aware of the fact that America turned away Jewish refugees in the 1930s, and it led to Jews being killed in the Holocaust.
You know what I was told?
That type of cruelty. Yeah, what?
Oh, no, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
You did totally cut me off, but go on.
I was told that from a Trump supporter that many immigrants that come to this country legally are actually more conservative because they feel like they worked hard to get here and that these people that are trying to get here illegally are you know, taking advantage of the system.
Did you tell them to shut the fuck up?
Yeah, I was like, what? Like, where did you get this fact from? He's like, no, they've done surveys. I'm like, who's done surveys? Where is this survey coming from?
I get that every ignoramus who's sitting there trying to argue with me goes, you know, I've done extensive studies in this. You just wouldn't understand if I gave you where I got this information, or I've heard, or there's an article on it. They never give me any actual.
Generally,
like,
I don't have that experience too often because most people don't go, I've read these studies you wouldn't understand.
No one's ever said studies. I've read this article or whatever. Right?
Like, instead, I get the oh, you're a liberal, you're deliberately lying type shit, right?
Yeah.
Not your expertise. But as I was saying, it's like Stephen Miller himself is of Jewish descent. But we know that in 1870, for example, one of the chief demagogues against Chinese immigration was a guy named Dennis Kearney, who was Irish. He was a labor guy from Ireland himself, who openly opposed Chinese immigration. He was Chinese himself. I mean, he was Irish himself.
Yeah.
He was very famous because every one of his speeches, he ended all his speeches with the same sentence. And whatever happens, the Chinese must go.
I'm not against that.
Does that sound familiar to anyone? I'd give you mad props if anyone knows where that's from.
God Bless America and No Place Else?
Nope.
From...
I'm really surprised you don't know this.
Wait, say it again.
You disappoint me.
Say it again.
And whatever happens, the Chinese must go.
From a movie.
Nope. It's from Cato the Elder. He never said the Chinese must go, but he ended it. Cato the Elder was so famous. He was a senator during the Punic Wars. He was so famous that what he did is in every single one of his speeches, he could be talking about agriculture. He'd be like, you know, the crops aren't looking good today, and, you know, we're having issues with watering and irrigation. And he would end every single speech with Carthaginium esse delendam. Carthage must be destroyed.
Oh,
you mentioned this like three years ago. Yes,
I remember this.
Carthaginium esse delendam. He could be talking about prostitution, like, you know, the prostitutes are out of control in the country, and Carthage must be destroyed.
You know, actually, I'm not against that either. We should destroy Carthage.
I love.
Did we not?
Cato the Elder is. We didn't. Rome did. What is this we shit, right?
I'm against Carthage.
Not only did they destroy, but then they salted the earth.
It's my official stance is anti-Carthage.
He takes this from famous Roman senator Cato the Elder, and he ends all the shit. Whatever happens, the Chinese must go. But what I'm trying to get at here is that what we are seeing at the turn of the century is a real clear attempt at defining what it means to be American. At the same time that you have the Chinese Exclusion Act, only a couple decades after 1924 or so, you have the Racial Integrity Act, the idea of one drop blood makes you a person of color. Literally creating two separate categories of what it means to be American, white Americans and colored.
Even the term racial integrity
is
horrible.
So what we're seeing is that in those moments, it's an social anxiety, and then it comes down to defining Americanism vis-a-vis ethnic nationalism. This is not unique. This apparatus, the Chinese Exclusion Act, the internment of people, the legal creation of a second-class citizen, all of that became the blueprint that Nazi Germany borrowed. Nazi Germany, Hitler studied the American model. There's a great book, if you're ever interested, called Hitler's American Model, The United States and the Making of Nazi Race Law, by a legal historian named James Whitman. For those of you who follow Head On History, you will know that I did a Charlottesville episode, special Head On History episode, where I talk about this book and I talk about this history, about how America has always been engaged in this battle of defining what it means to be American. And immigrants are caught in that crossfires as white ethnic nationalism, on one hand, tries to define Americanness as white, and therefore against immigrants, versus the multicultural integrative model that tries to define Americanness as broadly as possible. That American is curry and hamburgers.
Yeah.
Right? that that model works, whereas there's an attempt to kind of erase that. This is why this history is so important. But how we remember this history is also really fucked up, right? So this is the real history that's been done by people like James Whitman and Paul Kerner and political scientists like Kaufman that really argue that when you say, this isn't us, it is.
This is America.
This is America, as he would brilliantly... As Childish Gambino. I was going to say, he brilliantly puts, but then I tried to sneak in his name. As he's quite brilliantly put it, this is America.
Yep.
You have to acknowledge that, but it doesn't have to be, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. But we let and, you it know, be. It's so crazy that you use the term, this isn't us, because, like, that is the cut and paste response to any of these people who've been outed as racist on social media.
Yeah.
Aaron Schlossberg, the lawyer guy, right? Yeah. Anyone else? The first statement that they always make after they've been called out for literally going off on people speaking another language in a restaurant or something else is, "This isn't me. I'm not a racist." That it's become the stock response to being shamed by society for doing something that is so gross, right, that it literally has no meaning anymore. When I hear someone say that, I automatically assume that they don't actually mean that. It is them. It is us. Yeah. It is who we are, right?
It is, but it's the way the narrative is told that is really important. This is why I've always said history is the most important discipline, not just because I study history, but because history is identity forming. How you study about where you came from is how you define yourself as an individual. And I mentioned this in our AP US history or AP World History special podcast on Head on History, right? Almost all of our kind of narrative stories about the past have raised the question of, what would I do if I lived in those era? I mean, even our fictional stories, the High Castle, right?
Yeah.
Indiana Jones.
Hell, X-Men.
X-Men, yeah. Inglorious Bastards, right? Yeah, idea of going and fighting Hitler, right? Punching Hitler in the face. Captain America punches him in the face, right?
Yeah.
What would you do? What would you do? That this isn't us. That's all distancing tactics. And it all leads to this moment in which it is happening. Timothy Snyder, Kevin Cruz, these very brilliant historians of American history go, we are living in that moment. We are at the moment, the crucial moment of authoritarianism that is most like Japanese internment, most like Hitler's America. This isn't hyperbole.
Hitler's Germany.
This isn't hyperbole. You don't have to ask the question, what would I do? You're living it now.
Yeah. What are you doing?
We are facing our demons.
Yeah.
Directly in the eyes right now.
Now, we could play the game of it isn't us and ignore that past history. But what we should be asking is not what we should be stating is going, this was us. It doesn't have to be. We did have those histories. They were cruel. They were heartless. They produced the moment that we are living in right now.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we recognize that, we can change. There's hope for the future, so to speak. That we don't have to sit there and play fantasy jerk-off to punching Hitler in the face. We don't have to sit there and watch Inglourious Basterds like, yeah, I'd shoot Hitler.
Bear Jew.
You don't have to do any of that. That kind of fantasy jerking off, right, is a way of making ourselves feel better.
Yeah. It also does you no good. It
does absolutely no good. The reality is that we are living in that moment now. So the statement you should be saying is not, this is not us. It's, this doesn't have to be. What am I going to do to ensure that it isn't us?
Yes.
Right. That's the real question, which is why we'll be joining protests on June 30th.
Absolutely. And I'm going to start my own protest. I'm protesting Hannibal crossing the Alps. Anti-Carthage official stance of V-Tran.
God damn it, V. This fucking episode is just giving me a headache, man. I can't.
It's a dark episode. It's a heavy episode.
It is. I don't know what else to say. Like, I'm just every day. Like,
do you know Hannibal's last name?
Burris. That's Barca. A comedian.
Barca.
Yeah. yeah, it's every day has been.
I don't need to know his last name. Shitty. I'm protesting Hannibal.
But, you know, good thing I could turn it off and restart it.
Turn off and restart it. Yes, Mr. Tran. It's a useful strategy.
Yeah, you could turn off life and restart it.
Just like I would do it twice. In fact,
you can.
Yeah.
Do it every day.
I think we should end the podcast here.
Yes, please.
It's a bit of a dark note, but sometimes, as much as we are a fun podcast talking about nerd shit, we got to keep it real, and we got to talk about things that matter. And, you know, as a historian, I'm consciously aware of the legacy that we leave behind. Someone is going to listen to this podcast 20 years, 30 years, 50 years down the line, and they're going to ask, what did Currently Nerdy think? Yeah. Or what did the average person think? Did the nerds, were they on board? Did we, were we apathetic? Did we allow this to happen? The reality is that there is an element of consent. The government, a democratic government, can only act with consent. It can manufacture consent. It can manipulate that consent. But the fact of the matter is, this is all done consensually. It's up to us to withdraw that consent and make it clear where we stand. And so this is our podcast way of doing that. And we're going to do it in our physical action. We're going to continue to bringing you breaking news and analysis on this stuff as we continue to also talk about other stuff in the nerd world. Let us know what your thoughts are. If you stand with us, if you reject this type of authoritarianism seeping into the United States. And this is going to let you know how you can do that.
Yeah, we coming for you suckers at Twitter. At the Currently Nerdy, on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy, on Instagram, at Currently Nerdy, on Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com, at YouTube, search Currently Nerdy. We are on Stitcher, Google Play, and the podcast app on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed, I don't know what the fuck you're doing with your life. If you have, thank you. If you left us a 5-star rating and a review, I love you. If you haven't, go fuck yourself and do it. And I hate you and I hope bad karma until you do give us a review. If you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can find my websites at thesandwichslayer.com or 7crossroads.com. Elite.
You can catch me on my Instagram and Twitter at AAOLOMI, as well as on my website at AliOlomi.com or on our sister podcast, Head on History Diz.
You can find me on the tweets, the Instagrams, the snaps, all that shit, at Dizbullah, D-I-Z-B-U-L-L-A-H.
For everyone here currently nerdy, thank you for tuning in, and remember, stay smart, you sexy nerds.
And we love you, unless you're a piece of shit, fucking hobbit-looking, golem-looking motherfucker named Jeff Sessions.